You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Monday to you. We appreciate you being here. Ethan Westerman here with me. Everything we said about Arkansas-Mississippi State last week, we're pretty much going to say the exact same thing this week about Arkansas-Ole Miss, just in reverse. Arkansas with maybe the most pitiful performance of Sam Pittman's time as Arkansas's coach the other day against Ole Miss. They lose 63-31. Wasn't really that close, I feel like. I mean, Ole Miss, they brought in some second-team defensive players in the second half that allowed Arkansas to score some points. And I think Jackson Dart just threw another touchdown. I sound like a broken record because I've talked about this a lot. They've had so many opportunities this year, last year, whenever you want to. I mean, like, relative to the season, in season, they've had these opportunities to where they can take a step forward as a program. And it feels like every time they have one of these opportunities, with the exception of, say, like the Tennessee game, they just blow it. They blow it, and they blow it at home. They blew it at home last year when they could have made a bowl game, and they laid an egg twice in November against Auburn and against Missouri. They blew it a few weeks ago against LSU. They blew it the other day against Ole Miss. You can't get beat like this at home. You can't get beat like this at home. You can't. This is four times now in the last five SEC home games for Arkansas, if you go back to last November, that they've lost by 24 or more points in an SEC home game. That is unacceptable. It's one thing to lose on the road where maybe 4,000 or 6,000 people follow you there and they watch you. It's a totally different thing when you're at home, you got 50,000 plus season ticket holders, and they're paying to watch this. And it's every game, it feels like, again, with the exception of Tennessee, that they're going there, they're excited, and the quality of the product on the field doesn't match the quality of the atmosphere, the quality of the attendance. And they just kind of, I mean, we saw it against Ole Miss. We saw it against LSU, albeit a little bit later in the game. We saw it a couple of times last year where people just kind of, they just silently file out about the second, third quarter. Like, well, we've seen this movie before. It was a terrible performance for Arkansas and a real letdown, I feel like, relative to where you felt like the program was at this point in the season. I know Ole Miss is really good, but they shouldn't be that much better than Arkansas.
Arkansas had an opportunity, and it just absolutely didn't show up. I think that's the most frustrating thing for people. It's they didn't even show up. I guess physically they showed up, they were there, but anybody who watched the game knows that they weren't ready from the jump. Mm-mm. It was just ugly. Couldn't cover anybody, it seemed like, all afternoon. They couldn't. They elected to receive the ball to start the game, and you're thinking, okay, this is pretty, you know, they're going to try and score, set the tone for the game. You looked up and at the end of the first quarter, and it was anything but a tone set from Arkansas, other than the tone set that they weren't going to be able to stop Ole Miss all day. We knew exactly how it was going to go. I think by the second Jordan Watkins touchdown, second of five, SEC record tied it. We knew that they weren't going to stop Ole Miss all day, and that's what's so disappointing. They did not even show up. Like, there was no – the most exciting part of the game, other than pregame, and the goal line stand that everybody forgets about because literally, like, two plays later, Arkansas fumbles in the end zone for an Ole Miss touchdown, was when they started to – they were down 28-10, and they started moving the ball, and you're like, okay, maybe they could make it 28-17 before the before halftime to make it manageable for the second half. And bad penalties, which I don't even know how many penalties they finished with, but it was horrible. Drive-killing penalties, just mistakes, and then a 45-yard field goal miss, which you can't really blame Matt Shipley too much for the performance. He made a 55-yarder, but it just... Yeah, and then Ole Miss scores a touchdown. You knew as soon as Arkansas missed a field goal with like a minute left that Ole Miss was going to go score a touchdown. That's way too much time for them against just air, basically, in the back end for Arkansas. So, yeah, it wasn't even falling flat. I don't even know if they just didn't do anything.
You said you knew it when it was 28-3. I'm looking up our text from our live updates on Saturday. This is what I wrote at the 14-28 mark of the second quarter. Ole Miss is doing whatever it wants thus far. The Razorbacks need a jolt here to keep this game from getting away. Moments later, Razorbacks offensive line getting pushed around by Ole Miss's defensive front. If something does not change, Arkansas is going to have a hard time staying in this game. You could just see it. Even though it was 7-3 or 14-3, whatever, Ole Miss from the get-go, whether it be their defensive front, whether it be their quarterback, their receivers, they were doing whatever they wanted. It wasn't like this was just a mismatch in one area. This was a mismatch all over the freaking field.
Mm-hmm.
Arkansas didn't look like they belonged on the same field with Ole Miss, and that's unfortunate because for years, Ole Miss has always been kind of one of those teams, I think Mississippi State's another one, that you kind of, that's where you kind of gauge yourself against because those are the teams that over the, you know, the entirety of the SEC, those have been the teams that have kind of had similar success or similar failures, if you want to, as Arkansas. They might have some up periods while the other has a down period, you know, whatever the case might be. But to see Ole Miss look like a Georgia roster or an Alabama roster, because I really believe that they might be the most talented team in the SEC. Doesn't mean they're going to win every game. Certainly they lost to Kentucky this year, and there's a lot of fault in that. But if you just look at their roster on offense and on defense and you compare that to Georgia or you compare that to Alabama or you compare that to Tennessee or some of these other teams, Texas, who are up there at the top, Ole Miss might have the most talented roster. They might have the most NFL players on their roster or certainly a comparable number to these other elite teams in the SEC. And to see them that much better than Arkansas, I think I don't know what the word is. It certainly calls it the whole last few years calling to question the future of the program, Arkansas under this coaching staff. But to see it on the field displayed like that the other day, it was really jarring. Because even the last few years when Arkansas and Ole Miss have played, Ole Miss hasn't really played up maybe to its talent level. They went out in the offseason last year. They knew they had a real team that they could compete with this year. They went and they bought themselves some big-time defensive players. They got some, you know, they've got the horses now all over the field that makes them a complete team and a playoff contender. And if they beat Georgia this weekend, they're at home. They're in the playoff, I think. I mean, barring something crazy happening down the stretch.
I'd agree. And this is, I said before the game, you know, people were asking, like, this happens every week for us. They're asking, oh, how do you feel? How do you think Arkansas is going to do? And I told every single person I talked to, I said, I think they should be competitive in this game. I said Ole Miss mm-hmm. is so talented, though, and Ole Miss's strengths.
You should be competitive in every game.
Yeah, you should be competitive in every game, but like,
and they're not. That's the frustrating thing is that they lay an egg like this 2, 3, 4 times a year.
Yeah, I told people I talked to that I thought that it would be. I said I expect Ole Miss to win by double digits, but I think it'll be like, you know, a game into the fourth quarter because I thought that Ole Miss, just with the talent they have and then their strengths, were an absolute nightmare for Arkansas, in my opinion, going into the game. And I see what their offense does and how they pass the ball around. And then I saw their defensive front and how they sack every quarterback they face. But that's the thing is I didn't expect Arkansas to win. None of us did. None of us on our staff picked Ole Miss to lose. But I think we all expected it to be competitive, and that's what's so, you know, wrong right now is that it's not even competitive. It's just Ole Miss doing whatever they want, and they have a talent edge for sure over Arkansas. But Arkansas this year has shown that it can, like, it showed some promise that they should be able to hang with some teams still. But they didn't even. I mean, like you said, they didn't belong on the same field Saturday.
This is what Sam Pittman said before the game. This was from SEC Nation Saturday morning, and then they replayed it during the game Saturday. This is what he said about the talent discrepancy between the teams before the game ever kicked off.
We don't have the money that a lot of the schools do. Now, we're getting ready to get it in revenue sharing. We don't have the money, so we went Blue Line Special a little bit with our old line, and from what I understand, they went Louis Vuitton over there.
Wow. Now, in fairness, he did say that as well at the Catfish Hole last Wednesday on the Sam Pittman Live show, and that didn't get any type of media publicity, I guess. It's one thing, I feel like, though, to say that when, you know, just kind of in the friendly confines of your coach's show. It's another thing to say it on the, like, on a national television audience like SEC Nation is. And I get to tell you, Pittman, we talked about this before. He has a tendency to say whatever is on his mind. And there's a refreshingness about that, but then sometimes, and a lot of times, quite frankly, it causes him to put his foot in his mouth. And I feel like that's the case there. That's one of those things that even if you think that, I don't feel like you say that out loud.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. You try and put yourself in the place of, you know, these Arkansas O-linemen that he's talking about. And you're like, is that like a, you know, does it make you feel good that you were maybe undervalued and they took a chance on you? Or does that make you feel like you're just cheap? You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, I don't know how a player takes that. I mean, he's certainly at a point with, like, I think you could have stopped at just that Ole Miss has a Louis Vuitton line. I mean, and that's just crediting your opponent because they did spend a lot of money on him, and that's clear. I mean, their whole defensive line, like, two deep and even three deep, honestly, really good. And so that was accurate. But then it just felt like a little bit of a, I don't know, just calling your team cheap. I don't know how you're supposed to take that as a player.
I don't. I mean, he's not wrong. He's not wrong that in terms of NIL, Arkansas does not have the funds to spend with the Ole Misses, with the Georgias, with the Alabamas, and we could name 10 other teams in the SEC, if not more, mm-hmm. that Arkansas is not spending with them. We don't know what Arkansas is spending in NIL. We asked Hunter Yurecek last year when he spoke at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club, where do they rank in the NIL? And at that time he said, we rank about 11th out of 14 teams in revenue, and he believed that the NIL pretty probably mirrored that, just in terms of the teams that are getting the most revenue, those are the teams that are getting the most in NIL. That was before Texas and Oklahoma came into the league, so you know it's probably 13th out of 16 or somewhere thereabouts where they are just in terms of NIL spending.
Where people are frustrated is why does Ole Miss get to be – you know, Ole Miss is kind of setting the bar, and it's like – you look at the two states, and there's just no reason. Arkansas's just gotten jumped by them. They were just...
Well, for one, Ole Miss, everybody knew it in 2019 when they hired Kiffin. That it's like, okay, you got to watch out for these guys now. Like, that guy's a heck of a football coach. He is a heck of a football coach. You don't get to be a head coach in the NFL at the age of 32, 33 years old, whatever he was, if you're not an incredibly bright football coach. Southern Cal, under Pete Carroll, he's part of that dynasty. Alabama, Nick Saban, he's part of that dynasty. You know, so, yeah. I mean, he's even at USC, when he got left on the tarmac, that wasn't a terrible USC team that he left behind. In fact, Ed Orgeron takes over that team, and they finished the year 6-2, and I think they won 9 games that year. Mm-hmm. So he's an incredible football coach. Everybody knew that. But what Ole Miss did was when the collectives, when it kind of – came clear what you could do with these collectives is that they went out and they got a real grassroots movement in their collective space, and that's what's helped them be competitive along with a coach who knows how to market himself, who knows how to market his program, who's a hell of a football coach on the field. And you take all of that together, and that's what you've got with Ole Miss. And the other teams that hired coaches in 2020, Mike Leach died, so you know, we're not going to put Mississippi State in that discussion. But, you know, Missouri and Arkansas, they have not – Missouri had a good year. Arkansas has had a good year under Pittman. But for the most part, those programs haven't been anywhere near as consistent as what Ole Miss has been.
Yeah, and that going into that whole coaching cycle, you know, a lot of this that exists in college football now wasn't a thing with NIL. But they hired a guy who was – you knew – I knew the moment they hired Lane Kiffin. This is a guy who's ready for whatever's next in college football. He's staying with what's trendy.
He's up with the times.
He's up with the times, and you knew that he was going to be able to navigate them through those changes that were to come. And, I mean, sure enough, he has. I personally think, you know, they're – and Lane Kiffin said it, they're two very normal plays, like not miraculous plays, he said, from being undefeated right now. And I get it. Shoulda, coulda, woulda. They're not. They have two losses. But I think just looking at teams on the field, I think Ole Miss is they can beat anybody for sure. And I think that being ranked number 16 right now, those 15 teams in front of them, I would not pick very many of them to beat them.
Are they the highest ranked two-loss team?
I haven't looked at it for
and,
sure.
And the real rankings that matter, by the way, are coming out tomorrow night, the college football playoff rankings. Once those come out, AP, coaches poll, none of that really matters. It's the college football playoff rankings that are going to matter the most.
They're behind A&M and they're behind LSU, which they lost to LSU head-to-head. Haven't played A&M. I don't think they do. Behind Alabama, who's a two-loss team. They're the lowest-ranked SEC two-loss team.
The Kentucky loss, I think, is probably what's weighing them down the most at this point. I've said this a number of times. Efficiency ratings that we do, it says Ole Miss beats everybody. It says Ole Miss beats Georgia this week, by the way. It's got them as a two-point favorite over Georgia, even though Vegas has Georgia as a two-and-a-half-point favorite on the road in Oxford. Will they beat Georgia? I don't know, but if Jackson Dart plays the way that he did Saturday against Georgia and Carson Beck keeps throwing three interceptions every game, I'm going to like Ole Miss's chances.
I know we do this on Friday, but spoiler alert, I'm picking Ole Miss this week. Like, they're so talented. I mean, Arkansas has zero excuse for losing that bad. They got destroyed, but Ole Miss, I'll put them up against anybody right now.
All right, I want to go back to home losses because this type of loss should never happen at home. I said this earlier. It should never happen at home, and it happens so often that people, I think they just kind of become numb to it. But just to give you an idea of how frequently these types of losses happen, I went back and looked up 24-point losses or larger in Fayetteville for Arkansas coaches. And since 2012, so that's not even 13 full seasons, because Texas comes in here in 2 weeks, and they might hang another one of these type games on Arkansas if they play like they did Saturday. Arkansas, though, in less than 13 full seasons, has lost 15 games in Fayetteville by 24 points or more. 15. 15.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? 15 games by 24 points or more.
I'm guessing four belong to Pittman.
Six.
Six, wow.
Six belong to Sam Pittman. I'm going to get into him here in a minute. But, I mean, let's just put aside the teams that Alabama, Georgia, we know LSU is great at home. We'll set them to the side. Let's just talk about, like, normal SEC teams. You know? How many of those would you have to go back, like how many years would you have to go back to find 15 24-point losses at home? I think for some of these programs, you'd have to go back decades, two, three, four, five decades for some of these teams to find this many games that Arkansas has lost at home by 24 points or more in the last 12-plus years. Here's the games, by the way. You ready for this?
Yep.
Okay.
Do it by coach. Can we do that?
I got it broken down by coach. I got it broken down by score, by team. Sam Pittman's got six of these. Chad Morris had five. Six in four-plus seasons. Chad Morris had five in two seasons. Brett Bielema had three in five seasons. John L. Smith had one in his interim season in 2012.
And that's the thing is Bielema had a worse SEC record than Pittman. But people remember when you get embarrassed like this.
Yeah. 50, like I'm just going to tell you the games they've lost by 24 more. 52 to Alabama in 2012. 49 to Alabama in 2020. 45 to South Carolina in 2013. That's a game where Steve Spurrier said it must suck to get your butt beat like that on homecoming. 41 to Auburn in 19. 38 to Auburn in 23. 34 to Alabama in 18. 34 to Missouri last year. 32 to Auburn in 17. 32 to Ole Miss on Saturday. 30 to Mississippi State in 19, 29 to Western Kentucky in 19. That's the game that finally got Chad Morris out of here. 28 to LSU in 2016, 27 to North Texas in 2018, 27 to Georgia in 2020, 24 to LSU this year.
Yep, that's a lot of games in that very short amount of time. And Chad Morris, I mean, it's honestly, I'll just remove his name from this picture because we know that was awful. I mean, that's so bad. That is terrible in 2 years to lose like that. Whenever you look at Pittman, that's something people remember. His record overall is fine, but you can't get embarrassed that often.
They go on the road and they've won some games.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got more. I think he's got the best road winning percentage at Arkansas. I got to look this up, but I think I wrote this earlier. I think he's got the best road winning percentage at Arkansas since Houston Nutt. Petrino might have had a comparable number, but it's right there in the same range. When you are losing at home like this, that's where your ticket buyers are. You know what I mean? That's why I say it's a totally different thing to lose at home like this. Take away the home field advantage aspect of this. You know, you lose on the road and people are upset that you're losing, but okay, you know, when it's at home, that's when people start getting really mad, because that's when I'm spending my $500 for tickets, and that's when I'm spending my money to come to Fayetteville for, you know, two or three nights, you know, during the weekend. That's when I'm spending my money on the food, on the concessions, the 3% surcharge that they're charging now for the concessions, the merchandise, all this stuff. I mean, people come to these games and they're dropping $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, depending on, you know, who you are and what kind of life you live. And so when you're losing these types of home game, when you're losing these types of games at home, it becomes a whole different animal. Mike Anderson got to stay at the basketball program for 9 years with very little postseason success. And I believe it was in large part due to the fact that they were so good at home. If you bought season tickets to Bud Walton Arena during those years, you had a really good ROI, really good return on investment on your basketball tickets. People aren't getting a good return on investment on their football tickets. And that's going to make to me, that's got to be a huge part of the consideration when you get to the end of this year and you say, do you make a coaching change or do you not? Is the fact that the people who are, you know, I mean, tickets are still a huge part of this equation here now. And if your season ticket holders are mad about the product that they're seeing over and over and over in the biggest games that they paid the money for their tickets, that's got to be a big part of this equation.
There are two home games left on Arkansas's schedule, and only half of the games they've played in Fayetteville to this point have there been people in the stands in the fourth quarter, and that's a real issue.
Yeah.
And one of those, we're talking half of them have people in those stands. One of them was UAB because it didn't handle business against them.
It was too close.
The only one that you truly had a home field advantage the whole time whenever you really needed it was Tennessee. And that's just, let's be honest, it's been an outlier this year. That's an outlier game. And credit them for winning that game. But the home showing aside from that has been really poor. And you can't welcome your rivals who you've played for so many years, LSU and Ole Miss, and you don't even have your home crowd in the fourth quarter.
So 15 losses for Arkansas by 24 or more in the last 12-plus SEC seasons. I went ahead and looked back a little bit further. Bobby Petrino had one such loss, 2008 against Alabama. I think that was his first home conference game. Houston Nutt had three such losses, two in Fayetteville, one in Little Rock in 10 years. USC in 2006, LSU at War Memorial in 2004, Georgia in 2000. Those are all really good programs. That's not Western Kentucky coming into Fayetteville and kicking your butt all over the field.
Yeah. You knew Chad Morris days, those were just, I mean, it's horrible what happened there. That was so bad.
I mean, and you know, this doesn't take into consideration other bad losses. Liberty may have not won by 24 points, but that was a bad loss 2 years ago.
Yep. And there's been several of them. BYU last year, I get it. BYU's, you've got to respect them, but that game last year, Arkansas should have won. It was ugly that they lost the way they did.
We got a lot more to go breaking down this game from Saturday. Also, a little bit later in the show, Anthony Christensen will be in here to talk about Arkansas and TCU on Friday night, their exhibition game down in Fort Worth. He was there, but first a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. This is what Sam Pippen had to say about Saturday's game on his coach's show Sunday night. This is courtesy of Hogs Plus.
We couldn't cover them. You know, we get penalties and couldn't get to them and couldn't protect. I mean, it was a whole team. We just couldn't get going in the first quarter. Got behind, had some runs on offense, never did really have much good going on defensively. Therefore, we could never really kind of get back in the game and catch up because we just had a hard time stopping them.
My question is, how are you not prepared for Ole Miss? How are you? You know, he said that, you know, we just couldn't match them in the first quarter. How can you not match a team like this in the first quarter on your field? A team with this type of reputation, a coach with that kind of reputation, players with those types of reputation. You got one of your players over on the other side, you know, who's maybe their best defensive player or certainly their best linebacker this year. How are you not up for this game? That is a real – I feel like that has got to be a real concern about this team.
Yeah, I mean, what else do you – what else needs to happen to get up for a game? Like, if you can't get up for that type of game – does it just take you having to play at 6 p.m. against Tennessee? Is that the only time you can get up for a game? Because that's what it seems like so far this year. I mean, this is a rival. This is a team that they've shown that they can lose this year. Like, they've lost to Kentucky. They lost to LSU. There's no reason Arkansas should go into that game not juiced up, ready to play. And it just seemed like, yeah, it was – I was just thinking before the game, I was like, it's kind of sleepwalking in the stadium right now. But then the crowd started to get into it a little bit. They started showing up.
That first Ole Miss drive, they were loud.
Yeah, they were loud. I was like, all right, the sleepwalking isn't here anymore. And then, yeah, all you had to do was wait to see the next time Ole Miss got the ball, and nobody was into the game after that. They got into it a little bit whenever Arkansas had a chance to get some momentum going to the second half. But after that missed field goal and Ole Miss touchdown, the energy was all out of there. And it's because the team gave them nothing to get energized about.
I said this last week. I feared that a poor defensive performance was on the horizon, because you go back to LSU and they moved the ball pretty much how they wanted to against Arkansas. They had to settle for some field goals that kept that score probably a little bit more respectable. But they moved the ball easily against Arkansas. 9 possessions, 34 points in that game for LSU. Mississippi State last week, they scored 25 points, and they left a ton more points out on the field. They had a turnover at the goal line. They had, I think, a missed field goal from either inside or right near the red zone. They had all kinds of just, you know, they had the boneheaded play where they get pushed back 15 yards because of the unsportsmanlike conduct. You look, Mississippi State, Arkansas forced 5 turnovers. Credit to Arkansas for that. But you're not going to get 5 turnovers every game. And they weren't slowing Mississippi State down. Mississippi State was turning the ball over. I mean, it wasn't like Arkansas forced just a whole lot of punts in that game. And so you could kind of see this coming against Ole Miss. The question was whether or not Arkansas's offense was going to be able to play a game that kept them in it. And quite frankly, Arkansas's offense, I did not think played well on Saturday. They 10 points basically from the what we would consider the starting offense. I know they had a lot of starters out there with Malachi Singleton toward the end of the game. But again, Lane Kiffin said this. They're playing a lot of Ole Miss's backups defensively. At that point, Ole Miss, they got their players out of there because there's no – I mean, the game's in hand. They're up 42-10. You don't want those guys in there and twisting an ankle and not be able to play against Georgia next week. And so I didn't think the offense played well. I know they scored 31 points. I didn't think they played well. The defense was terrible. I mean, every defensive just about every defensive record that you could imagine was challenged in this game. 694 yards. And again, I don't get too caught up in yards, but that is the fifth highest yards total. Efficiency, that's what I keep coming back to. Ole Miss scored 8 offensive touchdowns in 11 possessions. And it could have easily been a 9th one had Arkansas not gotten a goal line stand there on the first drive of the game. Ole Miss just moved up and down the field, up and down the field. Arkansas's defense has got some real issues. And I feel like Sarkisian, the type of play caller he is, I mean, he and Lane Kiffin, they come from the same tree. They were both with Pete Carroll. They were both with Nick Saban. They've worked together for a long time. I feel like Sarkisian's going to be able to scheme around this defense probably the exact same way that Kiffin did. Arkansas slowed down Tennessee. And when they did, they were 5th in the SEC in efficiency. Now they're 15th 3 games later because their last 3 games have been so, so bad defensively. Defense was the identity of this team. And now it feels like a team that has no identity.
Oh, yeah. This, It was a horrible defensive performance. I mean, we know how bad Mississippi State is covering people. Arkansas went to last place in the SEC in pass defense after Saturday. They went below Mississippi State.
Mm.
That's
not company you want to keep.
That's hard to do. Yeah. And that's I think that Lane Kiffin probably watched that Mississippi State game, and, you know, he's seeing all the points that they left on the field. He's seeing that all you really had to do against Arkansas Saturday was challenge them down the field, just throw it deep, and you're either going to get a 63-yard touchdown or you're going to get a pass interference.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like they were just like, we're just going to keep taking shots until Arkansas does something.
Ole Miss did what we expected LSU to do 2 weeks earlier, and LSU kept running those little hitch routes out to the sideline, and they just dinked and dimed their way down the field.
Yeah.
Ole Miss, they said, you know, we're going to go for it. And I can't imagine that Kiffin or Charlie Weiss or Jackson Dart or Jordan Watkins or any of these people who were involved in that passing game on Saturday could have dreamed that they would have the type of performance they had against the Razorbacks. Pittman, he addressed, I don't know if this was just defense, but basically he kind of addressed what the problems were on Saturday on his coach's show.
You know, most of the problems we had were physical, which you can fix a lot better than mental ones, because mental ones, you know, you've worked on it all week and you should be able to get the assignment, which I felt like we did. It was just physically we got dominated at times.
Got dominated on the offensive line. Their cornerbacks were they were abused, Ethan. It was just like they moved Jordan Watkins around, and we're going to hear Lane Kiffin talk about this here in just a second. They moved Jordan Watkins around, and, you know, whether it be Singletary, whether it be Robinson, they found these one-on-one matchups, and they just went to town the entire game.
Yeah, they had utmost confidence that their receivers could beat these Arkansas DBs anytime they wanted to, especially Watkins. They just were moving him all around, and just chunking it deep to him. It was so, like, you know, if Arkansas's taking deep shots with Taylen Green all game, you're just waiting for the interceptions to start coming. They had no, like, it's a risk you take when you take these deep shots that you're going to get picked off. They knew that they would just burn these DBs and score. But, yeah, Arkansas hasn't shown that they can get takeaways at all. In their four losses, they have one takeaway. They're averaging 0.06, I believe I have that right, 0.06 takeaways per quarter in losses. There you go.
Yeah, that won't get things done. This is what Lane Kiffin said Saturday about Jordan Watkins and the performance he had. 8 catches, 254 yards, 5 touchdowns, 3 of which were 62 yards or longer. It was one of the great performances in SEC history by a receiver.
It was huge. We actually move him. If you look throughout the game, he's right and left, you know, moving him for matchups on a specific player, and just really thought that those were in our favor. Really thought coming in, you know, if they were going to leave people in man-to-man, I thought our tight end matchup with Daquan and Jordan on that guy were really in our favor.
So he doesn't say who that guy is.
And so I was like, let me go back and see who it was. And then I'm like, oh, wait, well, he scored on everybody.
I think he beat Singletary once, and I think he beat Robinson twice, 1-on-1.
Yeah, and he beat Hudson Clark once.
Did he? Bad. I mean, he beat everybody.
He beat everybody. It's just,
and
I was like,
what's amazing
about
what Ole Miss did is that it wasn't just Jordan Watkins. They had Caden Lee, who had 100 and something yards. They had Daquan Wright, their tight end, who had 99 yards. And he was who you thought was going to kill him early in the game because they just kept going to him. And then all of a sudden, boom, second quarter comes along. Well, there goes that guy. And they didn't have their best receiver. They didn't have Trey Harris, who's leading the country in receiving yards per game.
Yeah, it was. You just don't know what more you can say. Going into the game, I was like, oh, Arkansas is going to have its best defensive performance of the season to stop these guys. But I didn't know it. They'd have to – you just need an average defensive performance to keep them from doing what they did Saturday. It was just a terrible defensive performance.
This is per Pro Football Focus. Jackson Dart had 6 passes of 25-plus yards on Saturday. I'm talking about 25 yards down the field. 5 of 6 on those balls. 282 yards, 3 touchdowns, a passer rating of 158.3.
This is straight up what I would do whenever I play NCAA football on the easiest mode. Yeah. Is I'll draft a five, or I'll
just run a Hail Mary,
recruit a 5-star quarterback, and just chunk it on easy level and win him the Heisman. That's what it was.
I tell you, one other thing that bothered me was it just, and again, this is my perception, and perception is not always reality. I just did not – with Landon Jackson, he sacked a guy. He sacked Dart in like the third or fourth quarter, and he got up, and he just didn't do it. He just went about his business, walked back to the line of scrimmage. I think somebody kind of gave him a low five. That's it. It bothers me when I see you getting your butt kicked and you're wearing a championship belt around on the sideline. It bothers me when they've hit two 60-yard bombs and the quarterback throws it, he overthrows a receiver and you're getting up and flapping your bird wings. I mean, these are the types of things. Have some situational, read the room. Read the room, okay? That stuff bothers me. And I get that they put the hours in and they should be able to celebrate and all this. But read the room. That's not a good look when you're getting your butt kicked like they were on Saturday by Ole Miss.
Yeah, I noticed that immediately when Landon Jackson got his sack. You know, I'm always kind of, you know, in those
and
type
I'll
of
guarantee
situations.
You, I will guarantee you the NFL scouts notice that too. When they put the film on, they're going to say, hey, look at that. It's 49-17, and he's not acting like he just, you know, he's just going about his business.
And he got chewed in the first quarter. Landon Jackson he jumped off sides twice.
Yeah, Deke Adams, and he was mad at himself.
He was mad at himself, but
we
Deke
watched
Adams
it happen.
Ripped into him like I've not
and
seen.
And then
Deke
Jackson
Adams.
Takes his helmet off and headbutts his helmet.
Yeah.
I'm surprised there wasn't, you know, I mean, blood
Landon
coming
Jackson,
out.
Landon Jackson, he gets it, I think. Like he at least came like ready to, you felt like he jumped off sides two terrible boneheaded mistakes, but he was he gets it, and he was playing hard the whole game, but he wasn't doing the whole celebrate my sack, you're down by 30. He just got up and let's go next play because we haven't been able to do that much this game.
That kind of stuff, it stands out to me.
Yeah,
And on the other end, the excessive celebrating when you're down, like you're just go, man. You know, don't.
I get it if you're a third string running.
And I'll say the same thing for Ole Miss. Hey, you're winning by 40. Let's put the fire extinguishers away. Yeah. You know what I mean? Come on.
Yeah. I think, you know, I get it for a third string running back. You scored a touchdown and the offense has 31 points, which I don't even know who scored the last touchdown. It was Luke Haas, I think. But
Haas, yeah.
I'm saying just situationally, I get it if it's a guy who never gets to see the
and
field.
Haas' celebration was much more subdued.
Yeah. And I'm just talking in general, not even the Razorbacks game, just situationally celebrating. I get it if it's a guy who never sees the field and it's your one moment. But some of these guys that, you know, they're on the field every Saturday for almost every play, quit with the celebrating when you're down by 30.
Yeah, I mean, and if you're one of these 80 people who work for the program on the sideline, you need to take that championship belt when you're losing by 40, throw it in the trash with all the athletic tape and the Gatorade cups, and say, we're not doing this anymore. Yeah. Not today, at least. We can go fish it out of the trash can at the end of the game if you want to. We're not doing this anymore.
Yeah,
that stood out to me. SEC, real quick. A&M loses their first game of the weekend to South Carolina, not even close. And Rocket Sanders was phenomenal.
Yep.
For South Carolina, like 144 rushing yards, 2 touchdowns, 92 receiving yards. That's why you go out in the portal and you buy yourself a big running back.
And it stands out that Arkansas last year, you know, before the season, it was like they were trying to get him as big as possible, and like.
Mm-hmm.
Then he gets injured and he just gets bigger because he's not able to move around much. He looks so much slimmer now at South Carolina, and just he still has that
more
like
agile
bulk to him that you need. But he just is fat. He looks faster than he did last year. He's playing so well for them. I said it on our pick show that I thought South Carolina is a team that they have a great pass rush. I was like, how are they going to affect the quarterback? And they affected Marcel Reed for sure on Saturday.
He looked like a true freshman playing on the road.
Yeah, which kudos to South Carolina. I think they're a sneaky, really good team.
It just kind of continues this pattern this year in the SEC where you just don't know what the heck is going to happen.
Yeah.
Arkansas beat Tennessee as a total outlier. Vanderbilt beat Alabama. Now, Vanderbilt's a pretty – they've proven themselves to be a pretty, you know, formidable opponent. But you just don't know what's going to happen in the SEC from week to week.
Yep.
Georgia, Florida, I think, is a perfect example of that. I mean, who had that game at 20-20 with 5 minutes left in the game?
I didn't have it at 20-20, but let's rewind the tape, Blake. I did say on Friday, don't act all surprised when this is closer than you think.
And Florida did it with a walk-on quarterback who transferred from the Ivy League. Did you see all the fights in the stands?
I saw some video, yeah.
Like the police were just beating the hell out of a couple of different people.
Yeah.
Now, who knows what precipitated that, but it wasn't just one incident, too. It was like there was an incident down closer to the field, and there was an incident up at the top of the field. The Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, they said they're investigating it. I mean, it was a wild day in Jacksonville. Vanderbilt beat Auburn. Diego Pavia improved to 3-0 all time against Hugh Freeze. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Is Hugh Freeze going to be fine at Auburn?
I don't know. I mean, if they fired Brian Harsin for the type of performance that he had in 2 years, why is Hugh Freeze still have a job?
Yeah, and there's people saying, oh, look what Harsin gave Freeze, the roster he gave him, and I guess you get an year one.
Maybe he's got a bigger buyout. Who knows? And obviously, you know, you've got the house settlement that's going to play into this that didn't, you know, that wasn't part of the equation when Harsin got fired a couple of years ago. But Auburn's never really been known to be a patient bunch.
Yeah.
Tennessee beat Kentucky 28-18. Let me say this about Tennessee. They're not, like, I know they're the number seven team in the country. Did they really strike you as a national championship contender? No. I feel like, and I haven't looked at their roster, well, I do, their schedule. I know they got Georgia coming up at some point in the next couple of 3 weeks. I can't see them being in the playoff. I think they're going to get beat one. They've still got to play Vanderbilt. I see them getting beat another time or two this year. And, hey, Arkansas beat them. Kudos to the Razorbacks for doing that. Tennessee, I was really high on them early in the season, and as the season's gone along, I don't know that there's a team that I've soured on more than I've soured on them because they have no offense. They have no offense. They have a great defense, but I just feel like they're going to get outscored in some games because they just can't keep up with some of these other teams.
The Alabama win was big for them. That does wonders for their resume. I think they can afford one more loss and they'll get in over Alabama because of it. Depending on who the loss is to, because they do play Georgia.
If Ole Miss and Tennessee both have two losses,
I give it to Ole Miss.
Ole Miss is a better team. But I think they're a better team.
Yeah, because then again, you look at Ole Miss versus Tennessee, if they're both two losses.
Tennessee's got to look at that Arkansas loss the same way Ole Miss looks at Kentucky.
Exactly.
With one exception, Tennessee lost on the road, Ole Miss lost at home.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was gonna point out, is each team would kind of have the quote-unquote bad loss. I think that Ole Miss would get the nod. But, yeah, Tennessee, they strike me as a team that if they make the playoff, maybe they win one game. But
Arkansas just seems like a program that's stuck in neutral. You know, it's like whenever there's, you know, a strong force pushing against them, they're going to go backward. Whenever they're pushing against a weaker force, they're going to go forward. And that's not really where you want your program to be. And it feels like it's kind of been that way for the last 3 years. Yeah, I mean, you can pick out some games that are outliers during that time, sure. But overall, it just kind of feels like that's where they've been. And you look at this season, and you look at the games they played. I mean, Oklahoma State, that was a terrible loss. We knew it at the time. And then you look at what Oklahoma State's done since then. Oklahoma State just lost its sixth in a row the other day.
To Arizona State, which I believe was a two-win team last year.
They are 0-6 in the Big 12. Arkansas had trouble with UAB. Have you seen what UAB's done this year? They're 2-6 overall. And they get outscored by a bunch every game. They did snap a long losing streak the other day. They beat Tulsa down in Birmingham. Auburn, that's a very one-dimensional team. They have no offense. Mississippi State, that is a very one-dimensional team. They have no defense. Tennessee, offense, very challenged. And so when you kind of dig into this team and the results that they've had, look, congratulations for winning the games. That's great. But really, the Tennessee game, okay, we set that over here to the side. Some of these other outcomes, I mean, I don't know where I'm going with this, but basically, I'm not real impressed with the schedule until you get to Ole Miss, until you get to Texas in a couple of weeks. There just haven't really been a whole lot of teams, and even Tennessee sitting there with one loss, it's not a team that you say, wow, that's this great championship contender team.
Yeah, well, this is what's so, you know, I think the most shocking thing that's played out this season.
I do like LSU and A&M.
Yeah, both those teams, I think,
playing A&M competitively.
But exactly, but that's what I'm saying.
Maybe one of the better games of the year.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that maybe the most shocking thing development this season is that they entered a bye week with LSU. I know that they had their toughest games of the year on the other side of it, but you felt going into the bye week that defense was their strong suit. Mm-hmm. Like they had what they had done to Tennessee, what they had done to A&M, even in a loss. What they had done to Auburn with the takeaways. And then since the bye week, the defense has been non-existent.
The shine has come off. And it's 2 years in a row this has happened, too, where they have a good front half of the year defensively, and then the back half, they just fall apart.
What changed? They got healthier after the bye. I know what changed is they played better teams, but that wasn't the case last year.
I think depth is a problem. You get to this part in the year, you're more tired, you're sore, and then there's nobody to come in and spell you.
Yeah, but my thing is it was after a bye week.
And that's what – I get it after a bye week. But I just think that maybe there's more tape on him. Maybe that plays a factor here. But I think more than anything, you know, you kind of look at what can you compare last year to this year? And I think in both instances, you would say the defense did not have very good depth. And I think at the end of the year, you start to get more tired and there's not guys to come in here. We saw this a few years ago with Grant Morgan and Bumper Pool. They're playing 90-95% of the snaps, and at the end of the year, they just wear down when there's nobody else to come play for them. And so I think that might be a little bit of what you're seeing with the defense, in addition to, they played two very good quarterbacks in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Nussmeier and Dart, very good NFL-type quarterbacks. Yeah,
give opponents credit for, that's certainly a factor in how the defenses look, but it's just like you just thought that after a bye week, they're the healthiest they'd been all year defensively, aside from, no Jalen Braxton. And then they've had their three worst defensive performances. I get it, the wear and tear of a whole season starts to add on them, but especially just right after the bye, that LSU game, how they got picked apart. Credit to Nussmeier, credit to Jackson Dart, credit to Van Buren. I knew he threw however many picks he did against Arkansas, but those guys have just eaten the secondary up alive.
All right. That's all we got to say about football today. I think we've got everything off our chest right now.
Yeah.
Anthony Christensen is going to be in here in just a moment. We'll talk about Arkansas basketball against TCU on Friday night. But first, another word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They have been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. Come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. It's weird what one weekend can do for you. A week ago, Arkansas was riding high. They beat Mississippi State by 33 on the road. They beat Kansas at Bud Walton Arena. Everybody was feeling good last weekend. Then, things didn't go so well. They lost to TCU down in Fort Worth in basketball on Friday night by a point. TCU hits a three with about 18, 19 seconds left in that game and beats Arkansas 66-65. And, of course, you know how football went on Saturday. This was John Calipari at Dickey's Arena on Friday night and what he had to say about losing to TCU.
Well, first of all, give TCU credit. They fought like crazy. We had every chance to win the game at the end. They made the plays and we didn't. We took tough shots and they were trying to get fouled and get to the rim. I've got to do – my challenge will be, all right, let's learn how to win. We took a one-on-three shot with the ball up. We took a three from our five-man what would you do that for? We turn it over on a lob because we look away and we throw it. So I got work to do. But the only way I would know it is in a game like this. That was great for us. And I think it was great for Jamie. That's what this is supposed to be when you do these kind of things. Both teams walk away knowing, and the same with us in Kansas. You walk away knowing, okay, we got a chance, but these are some holes. We've had 5 guys practice until the last few days, so the situational work we need, we haven't done. It's not, I can't blame the players. We didn't look organized. We didn't get the kind of shots you need to get to win a game. The ball didn't go to where it needed to go. We didn't pass enough. I mean, there was many, when we moved the ball, we looked good, but we had guys holding the ball. So a lot of work to do. They kind of hit us in the mouth, which was okay. What are we going to be?
As John Calipari on Friday night down in Fort Worth. Anthony Christensen was there. He's joining me now. You know, I give Calipari a lot of credit for scheduling like he did in the preseason. It would be very easy to go out and play a couple of no-name teams, you know, play a Texas Tyler, an Emporia State, the EA Sports All-Stars or something like that, you know, and play these types of teams and really not know where you're at. I feel like they know a ton about their team because of the type of competition they played. Kansas, we know what Kansas is. And TCU, I don't know where they're going to end up in the Big 12, but, you know, even a middle-of-the-pack team of the Big 12 is a very, very good basketball team, and we know TCU is that with Jamie Dixon.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, there was a lot to, I guess, take away from that game. I wrote a long list of takeaways. Or, I mean, not a long list of takeaways, but long-winded takeaways of a long-winded things of a few takeaways. I can't talk. But just from that game, and, you know, like you mentioned, there were some times where they took some, you know, ill-advised shots. I remember at one point Carter Knox just kind of chucked up a three with a lot of time left in the shot clock that was contested, that was kind of, you know, hey, what are we doing there? But and not to knock Carter Knox, obviously he's a freshman, he's still learning all that stuff, but you know, there was some stuff to clean up. Another thing was, I mean, TCU played 12 deep, which isn't something you're going to see a lot during the regular season. And Arkansas only played 8 deep. So maybe some fatigue kind of came in there at the end, like he was talking about. There were some times that, you know, maybe they rushed some things or weren't moving the ball around quite as much. So maybe some fatigue set in. And not to, you know, say that's an excuse or anything, but you know, that is something that maybe kind of played into that game, but yeah.
So what happened in the fourth quarter? Because I'm tracking this. I'm at a high school game Friday night, and I'm just tracking the score. You're our eyes because, you know, I mean, there's no video of this. So they're winning by 13 points. I'm like, okay, it looks like they're going to pull away and they're going to win this thing. And then I look at the end, and TCU has won. They blew, what, a 13-point lead?
Yes, yeah.
And so, they went about 3.5-plus at the end without scoring anything. Arkansas did. Mm-hmm. But like, how did things break down the stretch?
Yes, I mean, some ill-advised turnovers and some of the ill-advised shooting that that Calipari had mentioned in that clip there. By the way, great camera work. I wonder who did that. But
can we tell the story about Anthony? Blake, you want to tell the story about Anthony learning how to use a camera before he left Fayetteville Friday morning to get this?
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen anybody have wider eyes.
Just to give you – so Blake and I have known each other for a long time. Blake and I, we went to grad school together, and we both have master's degrees in documentary filmmaking. So we are very we're capable with cameras. Anthony, on the other hand, is not. And so Anthony has got – Blake and I, he's got Blake on one side, he's got me on the other, and we're kind of telling him, okay, this is what you do, this is what you do, this is what you do. And Anthony leaves here, and I just laugh, and I look at Blake, I said, have you ever seen anybody more scared than he was just then?
No, you did good, man. It worked out.
It did record.
I'm glad I'm glad you got it. It looks better than the Zoom video that everybody else got.
That's true.
What were we talking about? How things broke down.
Yeah,
the
breakdown. I mean, TCU went on an 8-0 run to close the third quarter. That really kind of shifted the momentum, right? Ernest Udeh was really good down the stretch, which is kind of what you want from a guy like him. If you're TCU, you know, the lone returning scholarship man from a team that was in the NCAA tournament. He was really good in the post. Had a really nice block on, I believe, if I remember correctly, it was DJ Wagner kind of going in for the layup. Had a really big block that really kind of shifted the momentum, and then Vishon Ouellette goes down, hits a three, and all of a sudden it's a one possession game. And then obviously at the end, Brendan Wenzel, a transfer from Wyoming, hits the go ahead shot, and TCU had fouls to give too. And part of that is kind of what Calipari had mentioned, that, you know, taking those ill advised shots and not kind of driving and going to the rim, which is where you're going to get fouled more often than not. And that's maybe part of why, you know, TCU had some fouls to give there at the end to kind of kill off some of the time.
I think John Calipari has got to love the outcome Friday night because it gets the team's attention. They'd been riding high for a week after beating an undermanned Kansas team at Bud Walton. It was a great performance for Arkansas. But, you know, relative to who was on the floor for Kansas, I mean, these are still very good players for KU. It's a good performance, but this gets the team's attention. Mm-hmm. It is so much easier to talk to your team after you lose than it is to talk to your team after you win, and they're getting all the attaboys and this and that and the other. And this is what John Calipari had to say on Saturday night, kind of about that.
More great camera work.
And I like that some of the guys struggled, because I told them, this is really good. Now, are you going to get your swagger back, or does this knock you in a hole? I mean, these kind of games, you either win or you learn, and we're learning.
That was a great soundbite right there by Calipari. So they got Lipscomb on Wednesday night. Based on what you know about Lipscomb, what you've seen from Arkansas these first two games, and we'll talk more about this game as the week goes on, but just kind of what are you expecting on Wednesday?
So, I mean, it's an interesting little dynamic because, I mean, Lipscomb's got a lot of returning production coming back. You know, a team that was really good in the A-Sun, finished second, and is preseason favorite to win the A-Sun. Lenny Acuff has done a really good job since he took over there. There's a lot to like about the team that they've got. Last season, they were a really good offensive team. I mean, I believe they were 12th in the country in three-point shooting, if I'm not mistaken. And that's, you know, an area that, you know, Arkansas kind of struggled at first, defending the three-point line against TCU. TCU was 4-6 from three in the first quarter, and then Arkansas kind of locked that down until the very end when Brendan Wenzel hit the shot to win. But one thing that Lipscomb had struggled with last season was defending the perimeter, which is something that you're going to want to see Arkansas kind of take advantage of, because John Calipari has talked about how he thinks this is a good three-point shooting team. His team last season at Kentucky was the best three-point shooting team in the country. So far through the two exhibitions, Arkansas has not shot the three ball very well. Shot under 30% from three in both exhibitions. So going up against a Lipscomb team that you would expect to struggle defending the perimeter, you know, maybe that kind of gets the three-point offense for Arkansas unlocked. So that's something I'll be definitely watching for. That and I guess the continuity, because I mean, a lot of these Lipscomb guys have played together in the past, and that's a big deal, especially for a mid-major where a lot of mid-majors kind of get eaten alive by the transfer portal. So Lipscomb having all that production coming back against an Arkansas team that really only has three guys who have played together for meaningful moments, that'll be something to monitor. And then obviously, is Jonas Adu going to play? That's another thing to kind of keep your eye out for.
It sounds like the crowd Friday night was about what I told you it'd be.
Yeah.
about yes. 4,400 and what, 60% red, 70%, something like that?
Something like that, yeah. It was, they play the American Athletic Conference tournament at Dickies Arena, or at least they did last year. I don't know if it's going to be the same thing this year, but it looked like the opening rounds of that tournament.
There was a charity component to this, and I heard that TCU set the ticket prices pretty high, which probably kept some people away. Again, it's Friday night in Texas. You got high school football that's such a huge deal there. And quite frankly, I don't know that TCU basketball really moves the needle until, January, February, if you know, maybe even March. I mean, it's not like it's a real, you know, I thought there would be more people there at Dickies Arena than 4,400. And I saw pictures of two Kentucky. Did you see this? The two Kentucky fans
the
sitting behind John Calipari.
Yeah, dressed as the Pope.
I mean, what is going on here? Kentucky, they remind me. This is what happens. This is like whenever you know the relationship needs to end and the other person beat you to the breakup. That's what's going on with Kentucky right now. And they can't handle the fact that Calipari broke up with them, that they didn't get to handle, they didn't get to dictate the details of the breakup. You know, they didn't get to say, hey, you know, we're ending this, not you. And then on top of that, he goes somewhere and he's happy. I mean, Kentucky, you got your own coach now, man. What are we doing here? You know, what are we, like going around following John Calipari to his exhibition games in Fort Worth, Texas? Like, what is this?
I didn't see them. I saw the photos afterward.
It reminds me.
I did chuckle a little bit. I'm not gonna
lie. You weren't here when Houston Nutt left Arkansas, but I was. It reminds me a little bit of how the Arkansas people, I think, felt, some of the Arkansas people felt toward Houston Nutt. You know, it's like you knew the relationship needed to end, but he was the one who got to break it off, and then he ends up going to Ole Miss and having some success the first couple of years. And I just feel like there were people who couldn't handle that. You know, let people go. Let them go do what they want to do. I guess that's all I got to say about that. Hey, by the way, some Football Player of the Week awards came out, and you can probably guess there's a lot of Ole Miss players on there. National Player of the Week, Jackson Dart by the AP. SEC, they've got co-offensive players of the week, and I think it's the first time I've ever seen that it's co-offensive players of the week from the same team. Jackson Dart and Jordan Watkins from Ole Miss. T.J. Dottery, who had the strip sack in the end zone that led to that fumble recovery for Ole Miss. He's the defensive player, co-defensive player of the week. Also, Princely Umanu, how you say this? Umanmele. Do we know how to say this? I had it pulled up a minute ago. Here we go. Umanmielen, Princely Umanmielen, who recovered that fumble in the end zone. He's the defensive lineman of the week in the SEC. There's no Razorbacks on this list. You can't get on a player of the week list when you have a game that bad.
I obviously didn't watch it because I was on the road back from Fort Worth, but didn't I did turn much. On tweet notifications, so they were popping up on my watch.
You saw the Mississippi State game.
I did, yes.
It's the same game. It's the just same reversed. Game, just okay. in reverse.
All right.
But it's the same thing where the home team can't stop the team on the road, right down the field. Can't stop them.
All right.
And they have one of the great offensive games in program history. It's just so weird how the role, how it was like kind of watching the same game, but the roles reversed on Saturday.
All right.
We'll have a lot more to go throughout the week here on our podcast. It's an off week for Razorback football, but we got plenty of Razorback football discussion. We've got some guests lined up a little bit later in the week, and obviously with it being the start of Razorback basketball season, we'll have a lot of Razorback basketball talk this week on our podcast. Of course, lots of coverage at our website, wholehogsports.com. We hope to see you there, and we'll see you tomorrow on our podcast. Have a great day, everyone.
Yeah. I'm watching two games right now.